The Patriotic Millionaires also purchase advertising time on various civic media stations throughout Wisconsin.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of The Maggie Dawn Show and The Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? My name is Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every day at 3 p.m., we have a little segment we call Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Because if you care about child care policy, you're actually talking about tax policy and wage policy. If you care about the border, say, if that's on your top 10 hit list, again, you're going to care about tax policy and wage policy. It all connects together. And folks, we got a great guest today to help us understand where we are at from a minimum wage perspective better. Her name is Emily Stewart. She's a senior correspondent at Business Insider, writing about business and the economy. Previously, she worked at Vox and The Street. She's here to talk about one of her favorite issues, at least one of mine. I hope you agree now, because we've been talking about it so much, the minimum wage. She spent years reporting on this stuff. She's a great one to help us understand it better. So why is the minimum wage an important issue to cover, Emily?
I mean, I think this is one where sometimes it kind of gets forgotten about, I think, like in the day-to-day for people, but also like in politics, it's been a big deal, right? You think about the fight for 15 in the last 10, 15 years, really talking about a $15 minimum wage. And that was a really big push. And it's also, I think, a politically popular push. A lot of states that are red states and blue states have really like a $15 minimum wage. When you ask voters if they like a $15 minimum wage, they say yes, including in places like Florida. At the same time, I think over the past few years, we've kind of stopped talking about minimum wage because I think a lot of focus has been more on inflation than it has been on what people are making, and especially low-wage workers. We have seen their wages rise, but at the same time, I think it's, you know, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. It has not been raised since 2009. That is a very long time. And as much as not a lot of people make $7.25 an hour anymore, some people do. And I think it's really hard in this day and age to sit around and say anywhere in the country that is a livable wage. That's really the poverty line, basically.
Yeah, it's stupid. Basically, and these are my words, not Emily's, of course. You do the math on that. It doesn't math. So we should call that a poverty wage, because people are going to be below the poverty level at that wage. Emily, how sustainable, either from a macro perspective or on a small business growth perspective, is a minimum wage at $7.25 an hour?
Yeah, so I think to talk through the math a little bit, $7.25 is about $15,000 a year. So that's less than a third of the median wage in the country. That's at the poverty line for individuals, obviously well below it for families. That is not a wage that we can live on. And again, like I think about a million people in the country now make at or below that wage, but that is not... it's not a livable place. And I think, you know, we also sometimes you think, well, you know, those are workers. And for, again, that's not most people, that's not me, but it's not good for the economy when people don't have money to spend. The consumers are really the backbone of the American economy. And if people are not making enough money to be able to go to the coffee shop to pay their rent, that's also bad for the coffee shop and for their landlord. And I think, you know, what we've also seen in some of the research suggests in the past couple of years is that when the minimum wage is higher and when a business pays a higher wage, that can ultimately be good for business. And they don't want to tell you that, right? But
right,
if you're paying better wages, that means your employees stick around. That means you get to save money on training, that you're not constantly trying to catch up and rehire. It's expensive to hire people. It's expensive to lose people. And so I think, you know, it's one of those where every time there is chatter about raising the minimum wage, kind of businesses, you know, say the sky is falling. This is going to be a disaster. This will be a mess. And obviously they do that because if they could not pay any money, they probably would, right? I mean, not but with a reason. But I think sometimes you know, it's important to remember it's not just good for workers. Obviously, it's good for low-wage workers, but again, it's good for the broader consumer economy, and it's good for a business when you're paying workers enough that they're not running for the hills the second they get a better opportunity.
Yeah, I've had on numerous CEOs, Emily, to your point, that say as part of their corporate growth strategy, it was to pay workers more because they wanted workers that weren't crushed under the day-to-day stress of just not being able to make ends meet. They wanted people to feel motivated. They wanted people sharing in the wealth that they were, through their labor, helping to create. We got a text from Andrew in Maine asking how many people in America are making $7.25 an hour, which, of course, excludes the tipped workers because they don't even get minimum wage. And I think I heard you say somewhere in the ballpark of, was it a million or more?
Yeah, it's about a million workers. So it's about 1.3% of hourly workers in America. So it's not a lot of people, but it is enough people. And we didn't get into the tipped wage. And even, okay, if it's not 7.25, in some places it's still 8 or 9. And again, there maybe there are places where you can haggle about what is the right amount. I think it's hard to say $7.25, even $8, if you're trying to support a family. Like, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it really is. And again, I think, you know, I've said this, I've heard other CEOs and business leaders say this, at base, if you must exploit a worker and pay them a wage that isn't even at the poverty level, perhaps your business model needs to be assessed as whether or not it's viable. It's just like, it's at base that that is what we're looking at. And there have seemed to have taken root this idea that, well, you should pay workers the absolute least amount you can get away with. That seems to be where, whether it's, you know, shareholders or activist investors or a board seem to look to cut. So when you hear those sorts of claims that, oh, we can't possibly raise the minimum wage because the businesses can't bear the cost, do you think the evidence bears that out, Emily?
I mean, it is. I think the past few years have shown us to some extent that's not true, right? We have seen this tight labor market that has really raised wages, especially for people at the bottom and the people who were the ones that their bosses were saying, we absolutely cannot pay these people more because if we do, the economy will get out of control and also everything will be a mess. And I think we've seen businesses have to pay more, right? Walmart, I think, now starts at $14 an hour. Target pays a much higher minimum wage. I mean, anecdotally, right, you walk down the street and you'll see a Wendy's and they're advertising $13, $14. So these companies can pay it because they are paying it. You know, I think also in the research, one thing that, you know, comes across when companies have raised minimum wage, okay, like what has happened? And where does that cost go? And some of it, you know, a little bit does go to consumer prices, but not a ton. And you can talk about maybe that feels like a worthwhile trade-off. Some of it also, you know, will cut in a little bit to profits. But we live in a world of shareholder primacy, right? Where the only thing that companies think about ever is make money for your shareholders. That's the, you know, end all be all of kind of the point of the business. But that doesn't have to be the end all be all of the point of the business. And if you're telling me that, I don't know, some big company is paying their workers a little bit better and that means their shareholders maybe aren't making as much money as they were, that feels like a good trade-off and one that we act like companies could never sacrifice profit. But what is it, I think when you back up a little bit, and this is a little ideological, but what is it? The shareholder doesn't have to be the only thing we think about. We can think about stakeholder capitalism.
There's a false choice built in there, right? It's that we can't have sufficient corporate profits to drive investments and shareholders to invest in businesses and buy their stock and pay workers fairly. And that is a false choice. We know that corporate profits across a number of sectors, and I mean the profit margin, not what they're spending in capital investments, not what they're spending on wages, not what they're spending on supply costs, has exploded since COVID. We haven't seen them bringing prices down. So we know that those margins have grown. They have choices about what to do with that. You can either pay off massive, huge billionaires like Warren Buffett in stock buybacks. You can return shareholder value in dividends, which is just a cash giveaway. or you can help invest in workers, your capital infrastructure for the business, R&D, et cetera, et cetera. There are always choices being made. The false choice is what gets under my skin the most. Businesses can do both. Got a great text in, somebody from River Falls texting that the argument that they hear frequently and again is that minimum wage jobs are not meant to sustain a career or a family. They're meant for entry level workers. What's your response to that, Emily?
I mean, okay, fine. Like, I think about this is a few years ago, I was at a different outlet and I was working on a story, talking to people making $7.25. And I heard that a lot from some, and sometimes they were 20 years old and they would say, well, this is just my first job and this is okay. But then they would say, oh, and also I have a coworker who is making this amount of money and is trying to support a family. And so I think pretending like these are completely different issues is like not reality for some people. There are still people in those low wage jobs when they do have families. And it's just, I mean, it is also, if you want the market to work, you want the market to work and you want people to make a living wage. And again, to be able to spend that money. And it's good for the economy that a 17-year-old has money to spend as well. But I do think to pretend that these are only entry-level jobs and that these jobs that don't merit a living wage is tricky because there are people who are trying to make a living on that wage, whether we like to acknowledge it or not.
Yeah, I think of a few things. First, that is not universally true. Second, whether we're talking about an entry-level worker or someone who's older, the point that you want living wages paid, wages that make life sustainable, is because it drives consumer demand. And it is the consumer demand which helps juice GDP, helps grow small business. Like, and unless you have a vibrant and healthy middle class, you're not going to have that consumer demand. That's the secret sauce. So this idea that we can sort of infinitely move towards more and more wealth and income inequality while maintaining economic growth over time, as it's been accelerating over the last 20 years, will hit a wall. We don't want to get there. The third thing I would say when somebody says, oh, well, minimum jobs are for entry-level workers. They're not meant to support a family. My response to that is, let me get this straight. It's totally fine as long as you can get away with it, because the 17-year-old doesn't provide meaningful frontline labor that your business depends on. Shame on you. It's like J.D. Vance's solution to childcare being like, well, just ask grandma. It'll all sort out. Come on, man. Folks, we're going to take a break. If the former president is still speaking when we come back, we're going to go to President Obama's remarks. Emily, I thank you for your time. I think he's still going to be going. So we're going to take some of President Obama's live remarks.